So today we have a very special date. It's the 18th day of the month of Elul called Chai Elul. Chai Elul. I'm going to share my screen and you'll see a little bit from Chabad.org. Baal Shem Tov founded the Hasidic movement. So whenever you hear the word Hasidim of any kind, whether Chabad Hasidim, which of course is my background studying in yeshivas, or you could maybe heard of other chassidim, you know, Bells and Bobov and Satmar and Ger and whatever, any chassidim. The word chassidim comes from the Hebrew, which means people who are doing beyond the letter of the law. And that is, in general, the word chassid is an ancient biblical, ancient Mishnaic term, a term from old rabbinic writing thousands of years ago. And it also comes in the book of Tehillim, that David HaMelech, King David, calls himself a chassid. And a chassid, according to the Gemara, according to Jewish tradition, is a term that is used, again, for people who go beyond what the law requires. Beyond the law, do more, a little bit more beautiful observance. It was not a name that chassidim gave themselves. It was originally given as a derogatory name by other Jews who felt that this group of Jews, the Hasidim, were too holy, were holier than thou. So it was originally considered to be a negative name, and then the Hasidim were very proud of the name, and they accepted the names. Yes, where you want to say that we are going beyond the letter of the law, we accept. Who started the Hasidic movement was the Baal Shem Tov. His name was Rabbi Yisrael, and as you see here, and you can go on Chabad.org, many other places, Chabad.org is a nice summary. During the late 17th century, there was the terrible Khmelnytsky pogroms, which people from that part of the world are familiar with, 1648, 1649. The Cossacks rose up against the kings and massacred in the process, although it was supposed to bring liberation to the ordinary people, but who suffered was the Jews. And they went through, tens of thousands of Jews were murdered. And they went through many, many villages and places. And that's what they had. They let all the, they took together all of the Ganavim, all of the murderers. And in the wake of these pogroms, there was a terrible, terrible problem that the Jews basically talking about like after the Holocaust. Terrible problem. And at the same time, there was a big split in the Jewish community, between the Jews who were a little better off financially and also more knowledgeable. So in those times, there was no such thing as public education. If you had money, you hired a melamed, you hired a tutor for your family, for your kids. And the kids learned. If you didn't have money, so the kids went to work as an apprentice with the father or somebody in the community, in the village from a young age. So they began, and now everybody was religious, so to speak. There wasn't the problem that we have, which is today's problem, where you have so many Jews who were raised not practicing. Everybody was practicing, per se, but there was a complete split between the group of Jews who were considered to be the scholars, the educated, the literate ones, and the Jews who were not. Again, mostly for financial reasons, not because they didn't have the capacity to be scholars. The Baal Shem Tov followed in the path of earlier of great rabbis, and he reached out to this group of Jews who, again, through no fault of their own personally, were ostracized from the community of Jews who were like sort of in the know, the elite, they considered themselves. And they considered the illiterate to be second-class citizen Jews. Again, they kept Shabbos, they kept kosher to the best of their ability. Most of them did not know how to read because they didn't stay long enough in school to learn how to read. But they did whatever they did with a very wholehearted and a very devotional attitude, and they completely were, whatever they knew, they did 100%, but they didn't know that much. So the Baal Shem Tov formed, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov joined initially and then expanded this group, a group of hidden tzaddikim. Hidden tzaddikim. What does it mean, hidden tzaddikim? They would dress up as if they were blacksmiths and as if they were farmers and as if they were wagon drivers, and that those were the jobs that the simpler Jews had in those days. And they would wear the same clothing and they would do the same job. They would actually do that job. They would become wagon drivers, become blacksmiths. And they would befriend the Jews who were davening in separate shuls. It was segregated shuls. Interesting today, we don't understand such a thing. But in Europe, until recently, right before the Holocaust even, there were separate shuls depending on your financial status, even depending on the type of work that you did. There was a shul for the wagon drivers, a shul for the blacksmiths, assuming there was enough in the town, or a shul for the work people, a shul for the business people, a shul for the scholars, and a shul, and so on. And they would go to these shuls, these shtiebels, which means a small shul, and they would befriend them, and they would teach Torah, and they would slowly but surely search out which Jews were able to study more and able to learn more. And in a very short period of time, as you can imagine, once there was a group of dedicated teachers who were teaching people on their level, in a very short period of time, there began to become a very sizable number of people who formerly were shunned by the elites, by the scholars, and now they became scholars themselves. They maintained their work ethic, whatever they were, most of them, and all of a sudden began to be a whole new picture happening, and this is happening across mostly across Poland, a little bit of White Russia, and the scholars who until this time looked down at the simpler Jews, the non-literate. They didn't know how to read Hebrew, and previously began to say that these Jews are, that they don't know enough. It's not they didn't accept them. They weren't happy, and they began to say that the Baal Shem Tov, in fact, and his disciples, his students, his followers, were watering down Jewish tradition. They began to say that in fact, the Baal Shem Tov was following in the footsteps of a previous false messiah, whose name was Shabtai Tzvi, a whole portion in Jewish history. All kinds of terrible things that began to say at the Baal Shem Tov, destroying Judaism, bringing these people into good Jews, just like they were, except through no fault of their own. They didn't have the ability to study. And this is all history, so you can read all this in Chabad.org and other places. And they are the ones who derisively and derogatorily called the Hasidim. Hasidim is, oh, you think you're so frum, blah, blah, blah. You're not really this. You don't really know how to learn Torah. As we know how to learn Torah, you're not really fulfilling the mitzvahs. It was all baloney. It was Baba Mises. It was simply untrue. But what happened was, unfortunately, too many people believed the accusations. And there began to be, from those times, a group of anti-Hasidim versus a group of Hasidim. And the anti-Hasidim actually called themselves anti. The Hebrew word for anti is mitnagdim, which means opponents. So they called themselves the opponents. They called the Hasidim. And the Hasidim said, fine, you want to give us the title of Hasidim, which means people who go beyond the letter of the law. It's a wonderful title. We accept. You want to call yourself opponents and antis? That's a title you can take on yourself. And the Hasidim refused to engage. From the earliest times, the Baal Shem Tov taught his students not to engage in polemics, not to engage in debate, not to engage, and instead just focus on the light, just focus on doing the good. So that is the background. That's the backdrop. So that's a historical backdrop that's important to understand for the development of the Hasidic movement. So this is the Baal Shem Tov. Started on the 18th of Elul, which is today, in the year 1698. The Baal Shem Tov was born, and he formed eventually a group of incredible scholars. The Baal Shem Tov himself was an incredible scholar, although he really, initially at least, kept his scholarship under wraps. He would not go around, established a group of great, great scholars, just like him himself, and they started to take his philosophy. What is his philosophy? His philosophy was to accentuate the neshama of the Jew and to believe, which is nothing new. This is nothing new. This is something that Jewish tradition had long taught, but had become forgotten. And become forgotten, meaning the attitude of one Jew to another Jew had become ossified, had become calcified, had become locked in stone, that if you weren't a scholar, you were no good. The neshama, the soul of the Jew, which is the essence of, obviously, of every person, this they ignored, and it was unfortunate. The Baal Shem Tov turned things around and undid it very, very successfully, to the point where, as I mentioned, what the misnagdim, the elite scholarly class felt threatened. And that's what happened. Whenever any class feels threatened, then they lash out, usually unjustly. So that's the negative side. On the positive side, the Baal Shem Tov taught that the neshama and the spirituality is, which is nothing, again, nothing new. He did not innovate any concept that wasn't already written in all the holy books. It was simply being ignored. And today it seems like no-brainer. But in those times, it was a very, very radical thought that you can focus on a person who doesn't have knowledge, who doesn't have the proper practice through lack of knowledge or through lack of being raised in a certain way, and actually reach their neshama, which is completely whole and never has never lost any of its luster, of its holiness, of its power, of its energy, and elevate the individual back to the person has the same neshama, perhaps greater, because we don't know who has greater soul, lesser soul. Could be the scholar managed to study, but this simple person has actually a greater, more powerful power plant inside, you know, the neshama, the soul. This is what the Baal Shem Tov taught. It was all considered radical, even though this is classic Judaism and always has been. And the Baal Shem Tov, therefore, inspired a number of other like-minded, great, great, great teachers and leaders. Among them was a great teacher and leader who became his successor eventually. His name was Rabbi Dov Ber of Mizrich. Rabbi Dov Ber of Mizrich furthered the Baal Shem Tov's philosophy and in a very orderly way sent his students to different places and made sure that the different villages and the different regions, and again, this is all Poland and White Russia, were taken care of and very, very orderly. Eventually, the Rabbi Dov Ber of Mizrich had himself, according to tradition, 60 students, 60 main students, and the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, was considered to be one of the youngest of his students, even though he became one of the greatest and, in fact, was considered to be his successor at the time. The Baal Shem Tov, therefore, began the process of accentuating the spiritual over the materialistic, accentuating the inner over the outer, and the great teachers who were all considered Hasidic Rebbes. That's the concept of Hasidic philosophy. The Hasidic philosophy, in a nutshell, means the accentuation, the underlining of the inner spirit over the outer. At the same time, and very importantly, it also some of the major concepts in the early approach, which again are classical Judaism. But were not as accentuated or as practiced or as looked to. Number one was Avos Yisrael, love for a fellow Jew. The concept that all Jews are connected. The concept that all of our souls are all coming from one source, and therefore we're all really one body. This says in the Zohar, which is a book of Jewish mysticism, thousands of years old. It was simply ignored. The concept that each Jew is interdependent and also therefore responsible for another Jew. The concept, and a very, very important concept, that Hashem's presence, and this is that's on the humanistic side, so to speak, but this came from the philosophical / religious belief that Hashem's presence, God's presence, is everywhere in the world and is directly, the essence of God, the essence of Hashem, is directly concerned and directly involved with every aspect of the world, from even those things that appear to be unholy, negative, terrible. So this is on the religious intellectual side. In other words, every philosophy of action is motivated by a philosophy of understanding. If you believe as a philosophy of understanding such and such and such, then if you're true to your beliefs, then you act out that philosophy in a certain way. So the Baal Shem Tov's philosophy of reaching out to every Jew in every place was motivated and was underpinned by the teaching, which again is from the Zohar, thousands of years old, and earlier than that too, in Jewish tradition, that there is no place that is void of Hashem's presence. Hashem's presence is such that even the way a leaf falls off a tree, and that leaf is going to fall on this side or on that side, is not only is it important, but it's determined by God, and it's important, and it makes a difference. And today we say the butterfly flapping its wings. That's the expression people use. So this is the Baal Shem Tov taught this in Jewish thought, that Hashem's presence is everywhere. Of course, people believed in God's presence, and the elites of that time, the Jewish intellectual elites, not to that extent. So another thing that Chassidus teaches is that the material world cannot, by definition, be antithetical or a block or a problem or an obstacle towards accessing spirituality. If Hashem, or rather since God is intimately involved in everything in the material world and is recreating, in fact, and this is again a quote from the Midrash, thousands of years old, is recreating the world every instant. The world was not simply created once and then God left and went on vacation. The world is an emanation, it's like a hologram, like a ray of light from the sun. It's constantly being re-emitted, recreated. If that's the case, then there's nothing in our physical world that isn't pure spirituality. God is creating it. God is energizing it. Without God's energizing and creation, it would simply cease. It wouldn't be there anymore. It would be the hologram without being emitted. It wouldn't collapse. It would disappear. It doesn't have any existence. There's no such thing as a real hologram. It's just a light that's being emitted from the source or being projected. The Baal Shem Tov taught this is what the world is. It was considered to be a radical thought because the elites at that time, again, wonderfully devoted Jews, they believed that the physical material world is a block to spirituality. They believed that if a person eats and drinks and sleeps too much, this is true, of course, but eating and drinking, the physical acts of just existing, is a block towards being spiritual. And the solution, therefore, is to fast all the time, to sleep on a bed of nails, if you could, to lie outside with fire ants biting you, to lie in the snow, to break down the body. Of course, this is true. If a person overindulges in the material, you can't be spiritual. But on the other hand, if a person realizes and recognizes this inherent spirituality in the material world, then all you got to do is use the material world. And it's fuel. It's fuel in your gas tank. So you can say that fuel in your gas tank is a problem because it smells. Or you can say fuel in your gas tank is a wonderful thing because now you can go all kinds of positive places with your car and you can do all kinds of things. So it's the Baal Shem Tov taught that the physical world is fuel to be used for spiritual purposes. By definition, because Hashem is constantly recreating it, it cannot be a block to spirituality. It's only a block if you don't know how to use it. But if you know how to use it, and you use it, in fact, properly, you can reach the greatest heights. In fact, the Baal Shem Tov taught, Hashem's entire desire is that we should use the physical world and elevate it by giving tzedakah from the money that we earn, by using the stuff that we have in order to do positive things, et cetera, et cetera. This is why God put us into a physical world and didn't leave us as angels in the sky, which he could have, but not created a physical world. If all he wanted was holy people and angels, not living a physical life. So there was, a lot to talk about, a very deep philosophy and a lot of detail to it. But this is the overarching concept. And this was considered radical at the time. Even today, it's considered radical by many, many Jews who haven't studied Jewish mystical thought and don't have this approach to creation and to materialism and physicality and so on. The Alter Rebbe expounded and expanded the Baal Shem Tov's philosophy in a completely new direction. So that means Baal Shem Tov's philosophy, again, these two prongs. Number one, that we are all spiritual, that every Jew is connected, that the essence of a Jew is holy. No matter how you act, you cannot contaminate your essence, your soul. Classical Judaism, but forgotten. And also at the same time that Hashem's presence is everywhere in the world, and therefore all that's required of us is to use the spiritual world, the physical world, for spiritual purposes. Then became a discussion amongst the students. How do you, in fact, implement in your life this philosophy? So, taking the material world and yourself and your own physicality and living a spiritual life, this is a big, big, tall order. You know, it's easy to say, but it's hard to live. So the students of the Baal Shem Tov, and then the students of his successor, Rabbi Dov Ber Mezritch, who is called the Magid, the preacher of Mezritch, form different paths. They form different philosophies and implementation of the original philosophy of the Baal Shem Tov. Most of the students said, this is something that only great tzaddikim, great righteous people can do. Everybody else, follow the example of these few great leaders, live according to their instructions, according to the master's instructions, attach yourself to a great master, and you'll do what you'll do, but they'll elevate you. So it's like going to a class and you go to a great professor, an amazing professor. Can you understand everything the professor? No, I'll never understand, but I do want to be, I want to have the feeling of awe that and of wonder from this subject matter. So I'll go to the lecture or let's say a great musician or let's say a great athlete. I'll watch the athlete. I'll try to practice as much as I can. I'll play the musical instrument as best as I can. I know I'm never going to be as great as the maestro, but if I attach myself to a maestro, that's my way of becoming a maestro. I know I'll never be a maestro. That was the attitude, which is logical. You can't say it's not logical. You know, a maestro is a maestro, plain and simple. But that was the attitude of most of the students of the Alter Rebbe and of the Magid of Mezritch, the Baal Shem Tov, rather, and the Magid of Mezritch, his successor. The Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, the founder of Chabad Chassidus, said, if Hashem created every Jew to have the energies and the capacities that they have, clearly Hashem wants from every Jew something different. In other words, the maestro is the maestro. The Jew doesn't have it. Whatever. All we have to do is live up to our best, and then we are maestros. Then we are, in other words, being a top-tier athlete simply means accessing the nth degree of your personal capability. All you got to do is live up to your personal capability. So now the question becomes, okay, how do you do that? So the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher founder of Chassidus, said every Jew has the capacity to reach a very, very high level. All you got to do is follow a set of instructions, which I am going to set forth for you. So the Alter Rebbe innovated, and I say quote unquote innovated, this the concept of working on your own and working through those levels on your own, getting to your level, getting to your very best. And this is what the Tanya is all about. The Tanya takes the mystical concepts that were taught in the Zohar, the early work of Jewish mysticism 2,000 years ago, and were taught by the Baal Shem Tov and the Alter Rebbe, the first Lubavitcher, founder of Chabad Chassidus, explains it to us, simple people, in a way that we can access, that we can work on ourselves, that we can elevate ourselves internally and that we can reach our own personal spiritual best. And that's all Hashem wants from us, is to be your personal spiritual best. Don't settle for less than your personal best, but on the other hand, recognize that you have a long way to go to be your best, and we can each reach certain very high levels. So that is a little bit of an overview. A lot to talk about, obviously, but a little bit of overview for today, the 18th of Elul, Chai Elul. Hasidim say, and this comes from the Rebbe's, that Chai, the word Chai, of course, means life in Hebrew. Chai Elul gives a life into the month of Elul. The month of Elul itself is a preparation month for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is not just another day on the calendar, that it's a New Year's day. According to Hasidic teachings, mystical teachings, and in fact, it says so in the Gemara, it says so in the Chumash, the earliest works, right there. The day of Rosh Hashanah is the day that we receive energy, a packet of energy, a credit line of energy for the entire year that's to come. Literal spiritual energy that's then converted into physical blessing, money and health and all kinds of stuff. So Hashem energizes the world on the day of Rosh Hashanah. In order to assimilate that energy, in order to internalize that energy, you need some preparation. Like a person, again, going to a concert, you don't know anything about music. You know, going to an art show, you don't know anything about the art. But if you prepare, then you go and you say, wow, I appreciate, I understand. So now you go to a lecture, you don't prepare, you don't do your homework. So Elul is the homework month. It's the month of preparation. Chai Elul gives a life, gives spirit, gives excitement to this preparation process by reviewing and talking about the life of the Baal Shem Tov, the life of the Alter Rebbe. We have excitement. We see these are our great teachers. These are our coaches, our maestros, our people that we look up to. We get energy and excitement from. And in fact, the Rebbe's teach that from the day of Chai Elul until Rosh Hashanah is 12 days. There's 12 days left now till Rosh Hashanah. The 12 days correspond to the 12 months of the year. Every day, we have the ability to elevate another month of the past year so that we enter the day of Rosh Hashanah completely rejuvenated on a completely new spiritual level.